Good morning. Hope you had a great spring break. Enjoyed a few days off. Of course, if you're an adult and don't have kids, you didn't get a break from anything, did you? But our kids have been off school, and so a lot of us got vacations, got out of town for a few days. In fact, maybe a few of you are actually listening to this on the web because you didn't get back for church. Shame on you. But those of you who made it, it's good to have you. I hope you've enjoyed it. This is crazy. I mean, the snow. Opening day of baseball season is on Thursday, and it snowed today. That doesn't make sense, but welcome to St. Louis. That's the way it goes. We got away for a few days. We did a family vacation, and the way the Hubbards do family vacation is an adventure. Have you ever noticed that when you plan a trip, you have it in your head one way, and it never quite goes that way? For us, it started just loading the car and realizing, like, we decided we went to a water park, indoor water park that's up near Chicago, and then decided we were going to go to Chicago. And we have one of these car top carriers. We started thinking about packing, and it dawned on me that car top carrier is not fitting in a garage in Chicago where we have to pay $30 a night just to stay there, but that's not going in there. And so it all began with us trying to figure out how we're getting all the Hubbard stuff, including two pack and plays and clothes for the whole family that included shorts for the start of the trip and heavy coats for the end of the trip and all that stuff. And so we just kind of wedged it all in there and got off. And like I said, we went up to a water park, indoor water park near Chicago. And our kids, you know, like if your kids are anything like mine, you throw swimming out and they're just like, yes, I will do that. I will go with my parents anywhere if I get to swim. And so we spent two days there watching our kids just enjoy the water park. And Grace and Mary were hilarious. There was this slide that was about 12 feet wide, and it was designed for three or four people to go down at a time, about maybe 15 feet long, you know, just a nice, easy slide, one too fast, perfect for them. And I spent 2 days standing in one spot watching them just run in circles to the slide and go down. That's all they did the whole time there. Round up the stairs, around, down the slide, up the stairs, down. And the water park was pretty fun. We didn't have, you know, it wasn't too crazy. But then we went to Chicago, right? And our family in Chicago, I mean, I was imagining, you know, museums and going to we went to the Shedd Aquarium and just hanging out in this city. First of all, have y'all ever used Hotwire? This is not an ad, but it works for us, at least most of the time. It worked, but it was kind of weird. I got on Hotwire, and the cheapest hotel I found, it said, is a 4-star hotel. Now, if you're not familiar with Hotwire, you actually have to click on and buy the hotel, pay for the hotel before they tell you what the hotel is. Well, actually, the cheapest hotel I could find in the area that we wanted to stay was a 4-star hotel. The 3-star was more expensive. So I was like, well, we're going to go for this. So I clicked on it. We ended up buying this hotel. We ended up at the Hyatt Regency Chicago. I went and checked online, and if I were to book online with them, it was a $200 night hotel, which I was like, oh my gosh, we got a great deal. And I felt so good about myself till we got there. It took me all of about 12 seconds to realize we do not belong here. It was like the Clampett family showing up at, you know, some hotel in Beverly Hills. I mean, we're walking around with gym bags and pack and plays and this huge honking stroller with our twins. And as we walked through, my wife is just like, we are never going to get a 4-star hotel again, because we could feel the eyes of people looking at us going, what are they doing here? And literally I could hear the prayers, please God, let them not be in the room next to me. Please God, please, please, please. And so, you know, we end up, it was a beautiful hotel, huge giant atrium, this fountain and pool that had, you know, the water shot and had lights, and our room was just amazing and beautiful. And I just knew that we were going to tear it up and destroy everything in it. We didn't, thank God. It went okay. But it was just crazy doing that. And then I got to tell you that trying to do Chicago and do mass transit, like do the bus, once again, in my mind, hey, we can do this. Trying to get on a bus with seven of us and this huge stroller when two of us are 2-year-old twins was a nightmare. It was nuts. And like, we were on a bus one time and it was packed, and I had to get off and get the stroller out, which the stroller took up half the bus, right? You just put it on there, like there's half the seating and the whole bus is the stroller. I'm pulling it out and people are just looking at me. They're having to get off the bus. We're just shoving them out of the way because we're frustrated. Girls are crying. I mean, this was the joy of our vacation. We got to the Shedd Aquarium and, walked through. And for the most part, the girls, we found that they never cry in stereo. It's always just one of them, but it's always one of them. What, pitching a fit is about something. I was so excited. I just wanted to see the dolphin show. It's all I wanted. And the girls were just playing and they were so happy. And they were, the people around were just kind of looking and were cute. And it was just wonderful until the show started. And then Mary decided she wanted to beat up the lady who was sitting in front of us. And she just turned around and looks at me. And then I grab Mary so she can't. And she just goes ballistic. So I missed most of it because I had to carry her out. This is the Hubbards on vacation. But we did have a good time. And hopefully you enjoyed yours. And you're probably thinking, why are you telling all us this? Because there actually is a connecting point in my introduction this morning. It is this. The stories we're going to look at this morning in the Gospel of Mark are actually the stories of Jesus trying to get a vacation too. And just like ours, we had an idea of what it should look like in our heads, and then when it actually happened, it didn't quite go as we planned. Jesus' idea of a vacation with his 12 did not quite go as he had planned, but the outcome of his vacation, of his desire to get away for just a while with his disciples, ends up with two of the most amazing miracle stories that we'll ever come across, and two stories that bring us to the very heart and soul of Jesus, and two stories that just as the Gospels are telling us who Jesus is, just reveal his true identity in such a deep way. And so we're going to look at that this morning. If you have a Bible, go ahead and flip over to Gospel of Mark. In the Gospel of Mark, we'll be in chapter 6 this morning, Gospel of Mark chapter 6, verses 30 through 56, page 718 in the Bibles at the end of your rows. If you don't have a Bible, grab one, pass it down, make sure everybody has a Bible. We're going to read a lot of scripture, we're going to tell you these stories, then I'm going to try to give you some application of what's going on in these stories, what does it say to our lives, that kind of stuff. But as you're getting your Bible, let me kind of set this up and explain where we're at. We are working through this story of the life of Jesus. It's one of four stories about the life and ministry of Jesus. We call those stories gospels. The word gospel means the story of good news. And we have four different approaches, four different versions of one story. There's not really four gospels. The early church didn't call it four gospels. The early church said there's one gospel with four witnesses. And that's really the better way to look at it. We call them the four gospels because they're the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the four stories of Jesus. But they're just coming at a little different angle, but they're telling the same story, telling us the same gospel, maybe applying it to different people who have different life settings. But in these four stories, there's only two miracles that show up in all four gospels. One of them is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. All four of the writers of these four stories, these four approaches to the life of Jesus, know that the resurrection is a big deal. And they all four include the story of the resurrection, the miracle of that. But the other one that all four gospel writers include is the first one we're gonna look at this morning, the story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people with a kid's Lunchable, all right? And so we're going to be kind of looking at this, Jesus trying to get away, and these stories are going to tell us who Jesus is and what he's about. But in the context of his ministry, what's going on in Jesus' life story is that about the age of 30, Jesus kind of steps forward and in his baptism begins to reveal who he is. And John, his cousin John the Baptizer, or John the Baptist, baptizes Jesus. And now he is publicly identified as the Son of God, and he begins his public ministry. And for a long time now, actually time-wise, it's been about a year and a half, he's been primarily hanging out in a region in what is now Palestine called Galilee. This is the northern part of what we would now know as Israel. It's a region that is both a political and a geographical region that is around the Sea of Galilee, but it's not just the sea, it's the cities and the region that's around there. It's governed by a man for the Roman government named Herod Antipas. We talked about him last week, and he's kind of a ruthless king. He's got pretty deep-seated issues, as does his whole family. And so the people have lived under oppression, have lived under hardship for a long time. But Jesus, for about a year and a half, has just been traveling from town to town, village to village, doing things around this sea and in this region, healing people, casting out demons, and just doing some amazing miracles. And as he's done this all the time, he's been teaching. And people come to hear him teach, but they really don't necessarily come to hear his words. A lot of them are showing up either because they want to see kind of what the new circus in town and be amazed at the events, or there is also this growing passion to exalt Jesus as this dominant king. They want to put a crown on his head, a sword in his hand, and make him the one who is now in control. They will jump in behind him and try to conquer Herod and then try to conquer Rome. And Jesus is kind of trying to deflect some of that, but that's kind of what's going on with the crowd. But the outcome is now huge, huge crowds are following him. We'll find out how large the crowds are in just a few minutes. And it's full of pressure. Jesus never has a moment. In fact, the text tells us that he and his disciples don't even have time to stop and eat. And so he decides, hey, we need to get away from this just for a moment to get a breath of air, for me to kind of invest back into your lives. What's going to happen is these two stories are going to kind of bring the Galilean ministry to an end. After these stories happen, there's a little bit more in the text we'll look at this morning where Jesus heals a few people. But after a year and a half, Jesus is actually going to start leaving, and he will make his way kind of in a roundabout way to Jerusalem, where he will give his life for all of us. But this is kind of the end, and the reason it's kind of end is that the miracle that Jesus performs with the feeding of the 5,000 is the climax, where now people literally are left with, am I just looking for somebody who will feed me, or am I going to find in Jesus the bread of life? And so, as the story goes, Jesus is about to do this. It's an amazing thing. Go ahead and read with me. We're going to just work through this story. And what I hope to do just the first part of this sermon is this. I hope that we will end up on a hillside in Galilee together. I hope that we'll feel the green grass underneath us and the hunger pains after sitting for a whole day of teaching. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going for the whole day, okay? Just so you know. But we start, I want us to enter this story for a few minutes. I want us to feel what's going on in the disciples' hearts as they watch the unfolding events and wrestle with this. Okay, so chapter 6, we'll begin with verse 30. And it says, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. Now, just real quick, what happens here is that this is actually the end of the previous story, which is part of a Mark's way of doing something. He does a lot of what's called Markan sandwiches. That's what theologians call it, Markan sandwiches, where he will start a story and he will end it before he gives you the outcome and throw another story in that kind of counterbalances or gives a little bit of flavor to the story, and then he'll bring the original story to a close. So here's the Markan sandwich, verse 30 ends. It's the story of Jesus sending out the 12. And he sent out the 12 two by two. They went out to all these villages in Galilee, this region that we're talking about, and they became the extension of the ministry of Jesus. One man became 13, and they went from town to town preaching, teaching the gospel, and healing people and delivering people from demons. And Jesus invested in them this power to do that, and it went well. But the sandwich that, you know, that's the bread on top, the meat in the middle, is that meanwhile, Jesus' cousin John the Baptist is beheaded for his faith. So the disciples have this victory. Meanwhile, this other guy who's been preaching the kingdom of God loses his life. And oh, by the way, here's the bottom piece of the bread. They come back to Jesus and they return to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. They had victory while John the Baptist had defeat. That is a deep reminder to us, is that if we come to Jesus thinking, man, if I just follow Jesus, it's all going to be beautiful. We're going to have nothing but victories. There's no problems in life. John is trying to show us with this Markan sandwich, it's not the way it works. We get both. No guarantees. But verse 31, it says, and he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place. That means we're just going to get away from it for a few days, or try to, and rest for a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. They couldn't even find a break to grab a bite to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of him. And when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd. So this is what happens. Jesus' disciples is like, man, it's been so pressure filled. It's been nonstop. Let's hop in a boat. Let's take a boat ride. and we're going to go find a place where it's not crowded, it's not crazy, there's not a lot of people. We'll eat in the boat, we'll kind of hang out for a little while, and then when we get to the other side, maybe we'll have a few moments of quiet. But while they're in the boat going, there are people on the shore who are just so obsessed with seeing these things that Jesus does. So maybe some of these people are people who had loved ones who were still ill, who were suffering, who had demons, who were just struggling, and they're watching Jesus in the boat. They're seeing this boat way out, and they go, that's Jesus. That's Jesus with the 12. And his popularity had grown to the point where anywhere he went, these crowds show up. And so when they pull ashore, they were literally the young men of this region were running, trying to figure out where Jesus was going to moor his boat. And they went on and they got where he was going ahead of him. So this desolate place where nobody is now is a place that is packed with people. And we're going to find out in a little bit in this story that as Jesus starts to teach him, that number gets to this to the crowd that would fill the Sabbath center. It would be 15, 20,000 people are now hanging around Jesus. Because we're going to find out that they count 5,000 men. But one of the other gospels tells us that's men besides the women and children. There's as many as 20,000 people who show up just to see what Jesus is going to do, to hear his teaching. And so before they even get their vacation, because see, Jesus thought, hey, let's go on vacation. It did not go like he planned. But when they get off the boat, you would think, you know, if it was me, I'd be like, all right, push the boat out again. Let's find another place. Let's get someplace. Let's do this in the middle of the night so nobody knows. Let's get someplace where we can be alone and quiet, but not Jesus. Verse 34. He went ashore and saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. He began to teach them many things. Jesus' heart is moved by this crowd. Deeply challenged. Rather than seeing them as a nuisance in his plans, he sees them as people who have deep and desperate and great need. And so Jesus begins to teach them. When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place and the hour is now late. Send them away. Go into the surrounding countryside and villages to buy themselves something to eat." So this is just one of those duh moments, okay? If you're, you know, got 20, 25,000 people and you're doing a conference, you got a couple options, okay? Let's say we decide to host a conference and just out of sheer craziness, 25,000 people signed up. We would have two options. We could charge everybody like $5 extra for the conference and have somebody bring in a meal. We could have this giant catered meal for 20, 25,000 people. It would be a headache, but it can be done. I've been to places where, like I went to a conference one time in Indianapolis where there were close to 60,000 men at this conference and they lined it up as we left. You kind of went out whatever door you went out, you would go out and they would have these huge tables with box lunches and you went by, grabbed a lunch, and then went outside and sat on the hillside or sat, you know, in the grass somewhere and you ate your lunch. You know, that's one option. And they charge us a little extra so that we could have lunch. And everybody had lunch together all at the same time because they knew that if they sent us out, you know, it might take a while and we may never come back. They wanted to keep us where they could keep the schedule getting tight and get everything done. So that's one option. The other option is to say, okay, there's some great restaurants in and around here. Probably not enough in Eureka to you know, house 20, 25,000 people, although I'm sure the business owners in Eureka would appreciate that. But we could send them out and say, go get lunch on your own, come back when you want. And the apostles or the disciples at this point realize we didn't go with plan A. We are not ready for this number of people to feed them dinner. It's late now. Some of these people have been sitting all day. They've been listening to Jesus teach for hours and hours and hours. Jesus, you know, I feel like I'm long when I'm about 45, 50 minutes. Jesus all day is teaching these people and they're sitting enthralled and listening to him. They're not bored, but now it's late and the people are hungry and the disciples go, hey, Jesus, all right, you know, good sermon and all. Long-winded today, and it's time for people to head home. We're out in the middle of nowhere because, as the Bible's trying to show us, they didn't end up in a town here. They kind of end up on a place that's by the sea that is kind of an open place, a grassy hillside, but it's not in a town, and no town right around this area had enough, you know, restaurants, enough places where people, they could feed that many people. They just need to go home and get something to eat. We can do this again tomorrow. It's time to go home. Because we can't do this. And Jesus responds, look at what he looks at him. Hey, imagine if you were the one walking up and said, hey, Jesus, psst. We got to send these guys home. These people, they're getting hungry. People have these basic needs that have to be filled. And we need to send them home. Jesus, verse 37, but he answered them, you give them something to eat. How you like that? Hey, you feed them. They're like, dude, got nothing. And he said, and he went, and when they had found out, he said, let's say, you give them something to eat. And he said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? That statement is actually a statement in the absurd. What he's saying is, first of all, it would cost us a year's wages. The second place, there's no place around here that has that much bread ready for us. We're not going to be able to out and go, you know, buy peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for everybody just like that. Nobody, no place in town prepared that much bread. And even if they did, it would cost us almost a year's wages to make that happen. Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Now, here's what happens. The book of Luke kind of expands on the story and tells us what happened. As they were walking through the crowd, one of Jesus' disciples came on this one kid. I mean, this whole crowd, only one kid showed up prepared. One mother. Moms, are you this mom? I'm just curious, because I think my wife would be, okay? One mom gave this kid a Lunchable. So it's 5 loaves and 2 fish. You got to get out of our thinking of loaf. Like, here's this kid walking around with 5 bags of Wonder Bread and 2 big old catfish. No, that's not what's going on here. The idea of a loaf here is like a wafer. It's a cracker, okay? It's not like a loaf of bread like we think loaf. It's generally an unleavened type bread that was baked in the Middle East out of barley. And we're talking about something that's not very big. Size of like a Melba toast, okay? He's got 5 loaves, five Melba toasts and 2 little sardines. The kid's got a sardine Lunchable. That's what his mom sent him out with, a sardine Lunchable. I haven't found that one in Schnucks yet, and we kind of laughed on the way home. I actually listened to a message by a guy looking at my wife, because my wife, it's like we went to Bubba Gump, you know, there in Chicago, which is a seafood place. But, you know, my wife looks at me and goes, I'm getting chicken. I don't eat seafood. I don't know what she would have done on this day. Because everybody's eating fish is the idea. Okay, that's what we have today. We have fish. But there was no complaining here. But at this point in time, this kid comes up. And you know, and the Bible tells us in the book of Luke that Andrew brings this little kid up and is like, all right, Jesus, we have searched the crowd. This is what we found. This little kid's mom sent him with a Lunchable. And Jesus does the craziest thing. He steals the kid's meal. He takes the kid's lunch, and then he looks at the crowd and begins to bless it like it's his own meal now. Appreciate that. I'm the one doing the teaching. I will enjoy this now. Dear Lord, thank you for this food, which I'm about to partake. I mean, you know, he takes the kid's meal, and he has this Lunchable, the couple of sardines and a couple of wafers. He says he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. And they sat down in groups by 150s. And taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing. He prayed over the meal. And then the miracle. And what the Bible doesn't tell us how it looked. It doesn't tell us whether or not as Jesus was sitting there, like, did he just break off a piece and hand it and then break off and like it just kept growing? Did it multiply into the disciples' hands? It doesn't really tell us, but there is something amazing going on here. And you got to feel as the crowd is sitting here, and all of a sudden they begin, you know, they're probably not even thinking. This conversation is going on between Jesus and the disciples, but now the disciples are waiters. Now the disciples are walking up to Jesus, getting, you know, a tray or a basket full of food and taking it out and finding these groups of 50 and 100 and go, okay, here's a meal. And they're going, ooh, you prepared. That's cool. Here's a couple crackers. Here's some sardines. And well, where'd they come from? I don't even know how to explain it to you guys. Just enjoy. And they go back, and Jesus just keeps multiplying this meal. And this whole picture here, first of all, we are seeing in Jesus who he really is. That in the beginning of the story of the Bible, there is nothing. And God speaks and says, let there be, and there is. The same creative person who created everything out of nothing is doing another creative act. He is creating from basically nothing. And he is providing this amazing meal for these people. And now this is not just any wafer. This is not just any sardine. These are fish and wafers that are created in the hands of the master, the one who created all that is. And he keeps handing this out. He keeps feeding them. And they keep going. He says, And taking the five loaves and two fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing, broke the loaves and gave it to the disciples, and they set it before the people. He divided the two fish among them all, and they ate and were satisfied. And they looked up, and there were 12 baskets full of broken pieces of the fish, and those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. I mean, imagine being there that day. You've been sitting listening to Jesus, and you're amazed at what he says. He's been healing people. People just walk up, and we'll find later in this text that some people even walk up, and they just touch the hem of his garment, and they're healed of all kinds of crazy diseases. There are people who have all kinds of deep-seated problems that look like to us like maybe some kind of weird emotional problem. The Bible's going to tell us that they literally have a demon, and Jesus casts them out. We have people leaving Jesus by the masses who come to Jesus broken, leave Jesus whole. And you're just sitting taking this in. And it's, you know, 4 or 5 in the afternoon. You know, one of the other texts kind of lets us know it's about this time of year. It's March, April time frame. Probably didn't snow there on that day. But they're just sitting there. You've been sitting, all of a sudden you begin to go, ooh, kind of hungry. Dang, my mom didn't pack me anything to eat. But you don't raise your hand and go, hey, Jesus, I'm hungry. Can you feed us? You just kind of sit and listen because you have this moment of tension where your need for food is driving, but at the same time, your need to listen to Jesus is there as well. And as you listen, as you begin to wrestle with this hunger, you see the disciples talking to Jesus, and now they're serving you a meal. And as you begin to eat, it begins to dawn on you that something really freakish is going on. That Jesus took this little kid's Lunchable and is feeding everybody with it. There are some people who really want to deny the miraculous. Their whole goal is to say, this Bible thing is crazy. It's a bunch of, you know, freakish stories. And like what the disciples are trying to convey as they tell us the story is not that Jesus did a miraculous act where he broke bread and just kept multiplying it and there's a creative act here, because the miraculous doesn't really take place. We live in a scientific world. Everything has to be explained by science. And so the real miracle here is that when Jesus got this little boy to share. And once Jesus got the little boy to share, the outcome was that everybody saw that kind and selfless act, and other people who had food stashed away took it out and began to share as well. The text here knows nothing of that. The reason all four gospel writers include this is that everybody that was involved in this event was utterly awed by it. Three of the four gospels were written or inspired by people who were eyewitnesses, people who were actually there. Matthew is a disciple, one of the 12. He was at this event. John, the Gospel of John, is one of Jesus' 12 disciples. He was actually at the event. And I've told you several times that the Gospel of Mark is actually Mark's writing down the thoughts of the Apostle Peter. Peter was actually at this event, is involved in the event. They are amazed and awed by what takes place here. The Gospel of Luke is a guy who his whole goal is to interview as many eyewitnesses and get the story as accurate and as straight as a historian as he can. And so Luke interviewed the eyewitnesses. This is not a story that was told 400 years after Jesus where they make Jesus bigger in life. This is a bunch of people who were there going, this was crazy. We looked around, there were 25,000 people, 20,000 people. It was just a mass of people. We didn't have a clue what we were going to do. And then Jesus turned around, looked at us and goes, hey, y'all feed them. And we just were like, yeah, right. And then when it started happening, now watch us. Look what Jesus did. Who fed them? Jesus did the miracle, but the disciples were the waiters. They did exactly what Jesus said they ought to do. He empowered them. It's beautiful. And they fed these people, and they get done with the story, and they start, you know, out of this 5 loaves and 2 fish, they start gathering baskets that are probably about the size of our basket here. It's kind of like the size of somebody's lunchbox, okay? The baskets that are referred to. They start gathering up, and there's 12 left over. He starts with a couple fish and 5 little crackers, and they end up with 12 baskets full of food left. And what the text says is that everybody ate and was satisfied. That means it's literally a word from the original language that they ate until they were stuffed. And then they went and gathered the leftovers, and they had 12 doggy bags from this picnic. Jesus' version of a picnic. And so the disciples are out of this, and Jesus tells them something very interesting. The next story begins with immediately, verse 45. Immediately he made disciples get into the boat, go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida. And he dismissed the crowd, and after he had taken leave of them, he went up to the mountain and prayed. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. All right, here we go again. This is another crazy thing. And so what happens? Jesus, you know, they are still buzzing about this, but Jesus dismisses them. And there's a reason this happens, okay? It seems kind of weird that Jesus, after this event, goes, I'm going to dismiss the crowd. You guys take off. All the commentators who write about this region where Jesus is. And the region is actually a region that is inhabited by a large number of people who are trying to raise a rebellion against Rome. It is where the crazies who are trying to look for a leader and jump behind a leader, they were kind of gathering in this area. And one of the problems that's even going on that the text kind of alludes to, and if you read some of the other gospels, you find it even more clearly as they tell this story, is that disciples are in danger of coming up with their own version of a designer Jesus. We have the same problem. That I want a Jesus who will fix this problem in my life and make my life about this. And in that culture, in that world at the time, the problem that everybody had was that they were oppressed by the government. Highly taxed, a lot of slavery coming from the government, just a lot of problems that came from the government. And this has been going on for over 600 years as a people. They were frustrated, and they wanted somebody who would raise a sword, would put on a crown, and would solve all their problems. And in this crowd, there's a large group of people that think maybe Jesus is doing stuff that will announce himself as the new king, follow me. And we'll have another rebellion, we'll have another situation where The Jews rise up, but this time our true king will make us great again. And rather than grabbing a sword, Jesus grabs a couple of biscuits. And rather than raising up a rebellion, Jesus feeds people. It's a different type of revolution that Jesus is trying to bring. But I think what's going on here is Jesus needs to dismiss the disciples to tell them, you go ahead, so that he can turn around and cry and go, I'm not that guy. And if this is what you want, you've missed my whole mission. I'm here to deal with a much deeper problem than your politics. But the danger is that at the same time, the 12 probably still wanted Jesus to be that guy. They probably were still in the mode of seeing Jesus as he's going to be the leader. We're going to be his 12 generals. And we're going to make a name for ourselves on this earth that way. And so instead of letting him be part of this dismissal, he gets them away from the situation. But they've got to be thinking, I wonder how Jesus is going to get where we're going. You know, because we've always ridden the boat everywhere, but he sends them out. And then something amazing happened. It says that Jesus went up on a mountain to pray. The devotional life of Jesus needs to teach us a lot. And I wish I had a whole nother sermon, whole nother hour just teach on this. But in May, we're going to talk a lot about prayer and the importance of prayer. But here's one thing you need to know. If Jesus deeply needed moments where he went to a mountain, got quiet before his Father, and had a deep conversation with him, so do we. So do we. And so Jesus goes on a mountain, he begins to pray. And one of the amazing stories, if you ever want to do it sometime, grab a highlighter and just start reading the four Gospels and read where Jesus stops to pray and watch what happens afterwards. Every time Jesus gets alone to pray, he gets silent before the Father. He goes deep with God. What happens after it? It's just amazing. And so Jesus comes down. As he comes down a mountain, it's now, the Bible tells us here, the fourth watch of night, which is between 3 and 6 a.m. So it's dark. It's late. It's the darkest part of the evening. And it says, he looked out and he saw his disciples. I'm talking about this. And they were making headway painfully. It means it was very afflicting for them to try to row and get the sails set, because it was going against them, and it was just another storm. It's another difficult night on the sea, and they're having struggle, for the wind was against them. About the fourth night of the watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. It says he meant to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. Now, once again, hop in the boat for a few minutes. It's a nighttime boat ride, which is already nerve-wracking, and the wind is blowing against you, and you are fighting just desperately the wind to get upwind to this place where you're supposed to go meet Jesus. And in your mind, you're going, how's he getting there? But you're riding against the sea. You're out in the middle of this lake that's just this giant basin. It's about 3 miles wide, about 8 miles from north to south. It's just this big kind of oval-shaped basin. And when the wind hits it, it's hard. And you're fighting against this, and the waves are kind of hitting the boat. And you know, in the back of your mind, you're remembering just a little while ago, Jesus was with you in the boat, and he spoke to the wind and the waves, they stopped. You're kind of thinking, man, if he was with us, he could do that again. But he ditched us again. Now we're out here in the middle of this lake and fighting the wind. And all of a sudden, you're kind of fighting. And you look over, there's some dude who, like, there's something coming across the water at you. There's a silhouette you see from a distance. And you begin to be like, oh my gosh, what is that? And, you know, and immediately you think, okay, people don't walk on water. It doesn't happen. And you're watching this person come. And all of a sudden you see, and you're like, that looks like Jesus. But people don't walk on water. And what goes to your mind is, that's a ghost. This is some kind of weird spiritual, you know, apparition. We need, the Ghostbusters mobile and their little, jetpacks to deal with this, because we got a problem here. There's a ghost. And you're all freaked out and you're terrified because you believe you were seeing a ghost on the water. People don't walk on water. I had a couple of events this week where, I was watching stuff where you had kind of those people walking on water moments. Like, first of all, just kind of piddling around, I found that, what's the guy that, the magician who does the crazy stuff? David Blaine, that's it. He had a thing where he got in a swimming pool and walked on water. Have you seen this? And like, while he's walking on water, they even show a girl who goes underneath him. And, he's walking across and all the crowd is amazed and all this kind of stuff. And then on YouTube, there's actually another guy who shows how he did it. kind of ruins the whole deal. And showed how they literally set up in the middle of this swimming pool these transparent, plastic pieces that were just lined up a certain way, and they put them where there's certain places where they left a crease in it, so there's a little bit of water flowing through it, and the people around them are all paid, so they act amazed with it, and even the girl who swims underneath it, it's there, and it's all camera angles and all this kind of stuff, and showed how he did it, and you're like, oh, well, that's kind of goofy. Well, we were at the aquarium, they have, as you're sitting there looking at it, it just looks like this giant thing of water, and here comes this girl walking on the water out to this one point. Then you kind of look again, you're like, okay, I realize they have this big old giant rock underneath there. Because when you see somebody kind of doing that, you're like, I have jumped off the diving board a bunch. I have never, ever bounced. Right? I mean, I remember when I was like 5 years old, and my dad literally had to save my life as I fell off my grandpa's boat dock into the water. I did not bounce and go rolling, okay? I went under. You don't hit water and stay on top. Well, I do, but that's a whole different issue now. But the bottom line is this is totally foreign to them. And is Jesus coming by them and says he meant to pass them by? I'll talk about what that means in just a minute. But he goes on, he says, and when they saw him, he was walking on the sea, they thought he was a ghost. And they were terrified, but immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. He got in the boat with them and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. Verse 53 tells us the end of Jesus' Galilean ministry. He says, when he crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret and moored to the shore. And when they got out of the boat, the people immediately recognized him, and they were back in the masses. And he ran about the whole region and began to bring the sick people on their beds to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he came, in villages, cities, or countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and implored him that they might touch even the fringe of his garment. And as many as touched it were made well. The ministry of Jesus, this person steps into humanity, and the things that he does should leave us looking at this going, wow, wow. We come this morning, we have needs. We all come here with all these struggles and deep-seated needs and problems, and psychology tries to tell us how we can fix those needs. And if we just get this solved and we get this in our lives will start making sense. And if you ever took a psychology or a counseling or anything class, you've come across Maslow and his idea of the hierarchy of needs. And the idea that as he studied people, he said people have basic needs. And he kind of created this idea of the hierarchy of needs, saying that as we have our human existence, we need these needs met kind of from the bottom up of this pyramid. And this is what it means to be healthy, to be whole, to be fully human. That if we can have these needs met, our lives will make sense. It will all come together. And so it begins on the bottom as he talks about physiological needs. He says, like these people that were there on the, the side of the sea that day, they were hungry. And the most base need we have as human beings is to have food and clothing and the basic physiological needs, the stuff that we have in life. And if we can't have those needs met, you know, we won't even hear the other needs being addressed. And sometimes we as Christians need to hear that. And even as we present the gospel, we try to preach to people, trying to present the gospel to people who have empty stomachs without any care for feeding them and following the model of Jesus here will just leave us, I mean, it will present an image that we're just cold people who only have a message and don't really care. But when we do that, we don't really act like Jesus. We're not really following him. We already read, and we'll come back to it, that Jesus had compassion. But then he went on to say our next need is safety, that we need to have safety in, you know, a safe place to go. We need to have a home where we feel secure. We need to feel like we're safe in our business dealings. We need to feel like we're safe in the way we do our lives. We need to feel like our kids are safe when they're going to school. I mean, safety is kind of the next need. And if once we have our physiological needs met, if we can meet people's needs of safety, if we can just make them feel like they're safe, we can get to the higher levels. Then he says the third thing that all humans need are love and belonging. That we need to feel like we have a place where we fit in, that somebody cares about us, that you know, somebody will touch us, that somebody will make us feel like we're important because we are loved. And once we have these bottom three needs met, what will happen is then we can start dealing with a person's self-worth. We can tell them that if you will just love yourself, you will think you will look inward and realize that you have this amazing value. You can start singing Whitney Houston's song, "The Greatest Love of All Is When I Love Myself." I mean, we can just have self-esteem. And this is pumped into our schools like crazy. That once we make sure the kids have food, they're safe, they when they get in line, they're not gonna beat up, they feel like somebody here likes them. The best thing we can do for everybody is to make you love yourself, to make you feel good about you, make you feel like everything with you is all right, that there's nothing really wrong with you. It's all about you. Which then leads to where we find, according to Maslow, true health with the idea of self-actualization. This is once I feel like I'm okay, you're okay, then I can come to the point where whatever I believe I can achieve, my whole point in life, the health of my life, is all about me being what I want myself to be. Now, you need to hear this. There's some things that Maslow said that sometimes we need to listen to. But you will not find health in your life through self-esteem and self-actualization. And what the gospel wants to show us is that if this is the pursuit, and this is literally, he's right. If all you have is sinful, broken humanity, if we can feel good about ourselves and feel good about the fact that I can be anything I want to be, sure, life will look like it's working. But that very path will lead us away from the God who calls us and who says, listen, you're broken people and you need a savior. We don't need self-actualization. We need salvation and redemption. And so what happens in this text, and what I kind of want to do just for a few minutes, is I feel like we all have needs. And what the story is trying to show us is that Jesus is the one who will reach deep into our soul and fill the needs that we really deeply have. And so what are those? And how does Jesus address them? Well, the first thing as we kind of look at our needs, is our real hierarchy of needs is this. We need the compassion of Jesus. We need the deep compassion, the deep love of Jesus. It is not self-esteem and self-love. It is the love of our Creator. And it says in the story of the feeding of the 5,000, the whole story begins as Jesus shows up on the shore and the people come running to him. Instead of sending them away, he says, verse 33, many saw them and recognized them, and they ran there on foot in the towns and got together ahead of him. And when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and began to teach him many things. Jesus begins to see this crowd, but the amazing things about Jesus, I mean, being in Chicago, it's just masses of people. Jesus never sees people in mass. He sees masses of people, but he always sees every individual. He is God, he is omniscient, and he has the ability to look in the heart and the soul. And he is literally, the word compassion is a very interesting word. It's a word that means bowels, okay? It's way down here. Jesus I mean, it's the depth of care. We've turned this word into the heart, okay? We talk about loving you with all our heart, and Valentine's Day is hearts. I don't know what they did on Valentine's Day back then when they used this word, but, you know, you get the idea. It's the depth of who you are. Way down deep in who you are. And this is what it's saying. As Jesus looked at these people way down in the gut of who he was, he loved them. He deeply had compassion. He deeply cared. He loved them deeply. We come, and many of you come, and it can feel like in life that nobody cares, that nobody really loves you. And one of the things the Bible wants to affirm so deeply is that God and Jesus have deep compassion on you. They love you. That Jesus loves you deeply. And he never sees you in masses. He always sees you. He knows who you are. He knows your hurts, that he loves you. And the beauty of the gospel is not that he loves you because of you. He loves you in spite of you. That when I look on the deep on the inside of me, I know what I'm like. I know how ornery I am. I know how, if people really knew what I was thinking. And then I stop and read a story and I go, you gotta be kidding, you love me. You love me. Your compassion reaches to me, and down deep in the soul of Jesus, he has compassion, he loves you. And our first need is not to figure out how to find the love of a woman or a man, to find the love of our children or our parents, to find the love of some other person. I was walking around the hotel and reminded, you know, you're in these weird Chicago hotels and literally watch a hooker get off the thing and go to her room. And both those people are looking for needs that neither one of them will meet. And our deep need is to know the love of God. And he says he saw them as sheep without a shepherd. It's a very interesting phrase. It actually has all kinds of Old Testament meanings. But the bottom line is he realizes that there is nobody who is deeply leading these people. But because of that, they don't want to follow anybody anymore. And so he loves them. And he does an act of what the Bible or what theologians will call common grace. When he started feeding this crowd of 5,000 men, 25,000 people, he does not go, here you go. You got to fill out a card and tell me where you've been the last 3 days. And did you pray? And did you have your quiet time this week? Did you go to church? Have you been to the synagogue? Did you confess your sins? I mean, fill out this card. And once we know that you've done everything right, I will feed you. Jesus just looked on them, had deep compassion, and then reached out to them and loved them anyway. And we often miss in our lives because we live busy lives in a world that is just surrounded by the stuff in the world. We miss all the beauty of what the theologians call common grace, where God is just giving his love to even the most staunch atheist. And they go, they take the next breath, they enjoy the beauty of a sunset, and they enjoy the love of a wife or a husband, and they enjoy the blessings of the world that are there, that are all gifts from a God who loves them, and they miss it. And most of this crowd got fed because of the deep compassion of Jesus, and most of them picked up their stuff and went home and totally missed the love of Jesus that was there being demonstrated for them. And here's what I want for you. It's God has called me to be the under-shepherd, the pastor, one of the pastors of this church. I want you to know the love of Jesus. I want you to know that there's no distance too far. There's no mistake too great. There's no brokenness in your life that he can't fix. And there's nothing you can do that will cause Jesus to stop loving you. Nothing. The second need we find in this is the need of the provision of Jesus. I mean, it's just the story of the feeding of the 5,000 is just a beautiful picture how Jesus cares for people's needs, and he reaches into the hunger, and he reaches into the hurt. and he cares for their needs. And we come with all kinds of needs. But if you're like me, you're a fixer, like most dudes, okay? If we see a problem, we're gonna come up with a way to fix it. But the truth of the matter is that in my life, I know that there are a lot of stuff that goes on in my life that I can't fix. And most of all, I can't fix me. I can't fix me. I'm a fixer, I try, can't fix me. And the beauty of the story is that Jesus steps into this situation that seems impossible. That seems like the only solution is to send everybody home and let them fix themselves, come up with their own solution to this problem. Jesus steps in with this beautiful provision. But there's also something really beautiful and subtle. Because at the end of the story, they pick up how many baskets of fish? 12. They have 12 doggy bags. How many disciples are there? That is so precise, folks. That is not random. Every disciple who was a servant now has a doggy bag full of this beautiful created fish and this beautiful created bread. Jesus has even given them, and he's going to send them on a boat. What did they take on that boat with them? Their dinner. He cared for them too. It shows up very beautifully in the story. And Jesus, I mean, we have these needs, and sometimes it is food, sometimes it is shelter, sometimes it, but a lot of times it's needs that are deep in the soul, and sometimes it's struggle with our family, and sometimes it's hurt with our kids, and sometimes it's disagreement in the home, and sometimes it's just the stress of life, and sometimes it's a job. And we come to Jesus, and what we need to realize is that, first of all, I can't always fix it. But I really hope you will find Jesus to be what the Bible calls him, the Lord who sees and provides. Jehovah Jireh is the name in the Old Testament, the one who provides. And you will realize that God will take care of you. It may not always look like you want it to look, but he will take care of you. He will see you through. The third thing we find from the story, the third need that we need is the empowerment of Jesus. The empowerment of Jesus. The beauty of the story ends up being just that here's this little boy who brings nothing and Jesus multiplies it. The more I realize the things that I have in my life, and especially as I look at the ministry that is Genesis Church, the more inadequate I feel and the more beautiful I see in Christ being the one who empowers it. We need not self-actualization. We need the empowerment of Christ to be who he's created us to be. Okay? That's what we need. And we see this, the beauty of the empowerment of Christ in this story. We come needing Christ to give us the strength to live the way that he's called us to live and to be the person he's called us to be. And the story just has a beautiful picture of that. The fourth thing the fourth need that we need is the presence of Jesus. And this just shows up really beautifully in this one phrase in verses 48 and 49. As Jesus is walking on the water, it says, verse 48, and he saw they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of night, he came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and they cried out. Now, I used to read this, thinking that what's going on here is Jesus is walking on the sea, and if they don't stop and notice him, he's just going to pass them by and be like, "See you, dudes. You missed the whole point. I'm out here showing that I'm you know, God, and I'm walking on the sea, but you don't want me, so I'm going to pass you by." That's not what's going on here, okay? It is actually a phrase that is a reference to an event in the Old Testament. So I need to real quick take that event. There's a dude named Moses. Moses was the leader of God's people, and he was up on this mountain, and he was having a conversation with God, and he said, "Here's the deal. I just want to see your glory. Can I see you, God?" And God's response is, "If you see me, it'll kill you. My glory is so magnificent. It is so bright. But here's what I'll do. I will put you in this rock, and you will kind of look through this rock, and I'm going to come by, and I'm going to show you my backside." It's an image of just seeing a glimpse of the glory of Christ. And what the text tells us is that God passed by him. The outcome is that Moses, seeing the glory of Christ, came down off this mountain, and his face was shining so bright from seeing the glory of God that the people saw Moses and they were blind and just said, "Bro, we got to put a bag on your head. Your face is shining so bright." The glory of God had so overcome Moses that he glowed. And here's the disciples out on the lake. They're in the middle of the storm. And what they need is Jesus in the boat again, calming the sea. And here comes Jesus, and when it says he meant to pass them by, the idea is not here that he was just going to skip on by them. The idea here is that his purpose in this event is that they would see Jesus as the glory of God being demonstrated in the same way that God showed up in the Moses story. They're going to see Jesus in his fullness here. And they are going to experience the presence of Christ. This is what we need, folks. We need the presence of Jesus in our lives. We need to see who he is. It's why we sing. It's why we always stop on Sunday and worship, because our hearts need to be lifted up and see Jesus for who he is. We just need to begin crying out, God, show me your glory. Let me see all that you are. Let me experience you. And the fifth thing that we find out here is the encouragement of Jesus. Jesus just hollers out, hey, it's all right. Don't be afraid. There's no, I can't believe you guys missed it. I can't believe you. It's just, hey, it's me. I'm with you. You're not alone. Don't be afraid. And some of us, that's the very word we need to hear this morning. Your life is, I mean, the needs you have and the stuff that's going on, it's just crazy. Just hear the voice of Jesus saying, it's I, don't be afraid. Be encouraged. Bottom line is we can't fix, I mean, Maslow's hierarchy of needs doesn't work because it leads to me as the ultimate fix to my problem. The gospel shows us that Jesus is the only fix to our problem. He, in just a short time from this story, is going to die on the cross for our sins and deal with the inner brokenness we have, and then he's going to rise again 3 days later. But in this story, there's a very interesting thing, and I just want to close with this encouragement to you. In the story, in verse 51, he says he got in the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded. For they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. Here's the bottom line. They didn't get everything that just happened. But that's okay. Because they stayed with Jesus. How are you going to experience these things in your life? We look around and we don't get everything. But the key is doing what the disciples, you stay with Jesus. You don't give up. You keep walking through the hardships. You stay in the storms. We are not going to get it all in this lifetime. But keep looking to who Jesus was. We were in the hotel at the water park, right? And Mary and Grace were hilarious when we told them it's time to go swimming. They literally started jumping up and down, screaming, swimming, swimming, swimming. Yay, mommy, swimming, swimming. And it was like nonstop. And then it became like herding, you know, rodents trying to catch them just to put their swimsuit on. Because, I mean, they're just jumping up and down, but they're running with their swimsuit. Grace came to me one time with her swimsuit literally put on upside down and sideways, where she had her arm through one thing, her head through one leg hole, her head through the other leg hole, and it was wrapped around her. And she had put her swimsuit on for us. She was ready to go, right? But Mary, this one time we were getting ready to go, and we were, you know, you got to put a swim diaper on them. Just part of the gig, okay? We do not want to end up with, you know, the other option. So got to put a swim diaper. And something went off on the inside of her head where she was going, she didn't connect the putting on with the diaper with going swimming. She connected the putting on with the swimsuit. And she had literally a meltdown. As we kept trying to take her and say, put your swim diaper on. And she would scream, grab her swimsuit and go swimming, swimming. And I'm trying to rationalize with this two-year-old. Listen, you got to understand. We put the swim diaper on first, then we'll put the swimsuit on. We'll go swimming, but you can't go swimming without the diaper. Total meltdown. She is screaming. You know, we're trying coercion. We're trying treats. Hey, come over here. We'll give you candy. Just put the swim diaper on. We're going to go. Total meltdown. 5 minutes of her screaming around the room, running around with her swimsuit, going swimming, but would not put the swim diaper on. And it dawned on me that she had this total disconnect. She didn't get it. And as I saw her screaming, wrestling with this, going, I don't want to put the swim diaper on. I want to put my swimsuit on because I want to go swimming. Whether it was my own mind or the voice of God, I literally felt, that's me. This is my life. God is the blessing of all blessings. He is beautiful. He provides for me. He cares for me. He has compassion on me. He empowers me. And I keep screaming, and showing with my life and my lips, I don't get it. I just don't understand who you are. I don't understand what you're doing. And God is going, listen, if you just put the stupid swim diaper on, we'd be swimming already. Right? But even in those moments, This is what the story's trying to teach us. The disciples don't get it. But Jesus doesn't throw them out of the boat. It's okay. They will eventually. But it won't be until after the crucifixion. And so if you're here and you're just like, I don't get this. Hang in there. Trust Jesus. Run to him. Take the storms and the brokenness and the needs and bring them to him. But realize this. You will never really have your problems fixed and your needs met until they're met by Jesus. Lord, we love you today. Praise you for the chance to be here. And I just pray that you will speak deeply in our soul out of these two stories and lead us back to the beauty that is Christ. And Lord, as we've tried to solve our problems with self-actualization and with self-esteem and with fixing ourselves, help us this morning, Lord Jesus, to look to you and to see who you are in your beauty. Lord, show us your glory. Let us see your face. Let us see the power of you walking across the sea and remind us that you are that same power and that same glory in our lives today. And Lord, in the next few minutes, as we sing to you, open our eyes, open our hearts, soften us on the inside. And in the places we don't get it, help us to see it. But Lord, just help us all to hang in there even when we don't. We love you, Jesus. In your name I pray. Amen.